If you're interested in listening ad-free, go to patreon.com/drnosleep. There you can enjoy my ad-free podcast and never have to listen to ads again. That's patreon.com/drnosleep. Now time for the story.
Dr. Nosleep.
I groaned as I got pulled out from my peaceful slumber by the familiar sensation of my dog's tongue and his horrid breath washing over my face. Remo diligently gave me another couple of licks, whimpering as he tried to alert me to what had scared him. In the background, I could faintly hear a loud, high-pitched beep emitting from my television. It had been left on as I drifted into sleep on the living room couch.
Come on, leave me alone. I'm tired,
I mumbled, not fully awake. Remo whimpered again, producing an honest cry of utter fear that finally dragged me into consciousness. All the while, the loud beep rang continuously in the background, ignored by my drowsy mind.
What's wrong? Don't tell me you need to go outside, I said. What time is it even?
I sat up and peered out through the nearest window, being met with little more than utter darkness on the other side.
Are you serious, Remo? It's still dark outside. Why are you like this?
I asked, jokingly. But Remo's whimpers continued. His cries weren't an indication that he needed to use the bathroom. It was real, soul-shattering fear. Only once I'd realized that fact did my attention drift over to the beeping television. For a brief moment, I wondered what kind of asshole had designed such an incessant, annoying sound. I instinctively reached for the remote, prepared to turn it off as I noticed the picture displayed. Emergency alert system had been plastered on the screen in big, block letters, simple white text on a black background. I froze in place as I tried to comprehend the image before me. It was fractured, with bits and pieces of the entire message appearing to be missing, including who was issuing the message.
Had issued an emergency action notification. This is not a test. Important instructions will follow.
With that, the continuous beep turned to a jarring, arrhythmic tone as the picture changed. Now it showed a numbered picture, displayed as message 1 out of 4.
Has been subjected to an unforeseen astronomical event, it began. Within the next 60 minutes, the first object will appear in the sky. The estimated trajectory has determined the following impact locations.
The image on the screen changed once more, displaying picture number 2 out of 4. It was a simple map of our town, covered in numerous markers. Two were placed directly in the center, with 7 more surrounding the outskirts. The map lingered for a minute before changing to the third part.
All citizens are instructed to seek aid in the pre-designated evacuation centers immediately. Refugees are advised to bring food, water, a battery-operated radio, and a source of light. Do not attempt to operate computers, telephones, or tablets. All lines are to be kept clear for emergencies. If the sky goes dark, seek shelter immediately, and do not attempt to reach your local evacuation center. For further information, contact your nearest contingency manager.
I immediately redirected my attention to the window, displaying a perfectly dark world outside. There didn't appear to be any stars in the sky, leaving little more than absolute darkness. Then I glanced at the clock in my living room, which displayed a distressing time, 12:15. Unless it had broken, it clearly stated that we were in the middle of the day, yet the world outside was overtaken by night. With fear rising within me, I forced myself to read the 4th and final message displayed on my old television screen.
If you are outside the evacuation radius as the sky turns dark, remain within your home. Turn off the lights, stay quiet, and wait for help to arrive. Under no circumstances should you attempt to confront the...
Again, a part of the message appeared to be missing, covered up by a static artifact. I kept on staring as I waited for further instructions, but instead, the message simply started playing on repeat. The first message of the emergency notification was displayed on the screen once again. In the meanwhile, Remo sat by the window, growling out at the darkness. I, on the other hand, was fixated by the message on the television, which played on repeat for 3 times before I finally decided to follow the instructions, which meant turning off the lights inside the house alongside the television.
Come here, boy,
I ordered Remo, who diligently ran to my side, letting out a few whimpers as he hid between my legs. With the television now silent, the world around us felt uncomfortably calm. Despite the emergency, there was an astounding lack of panic outside, nor traffic of any sort to be heard. It was as if the entire town upped and left as I lay sleeping on the sofa. But I hadn't been out for that long, had I? Though the alert had instructed me not to use my phone, I had to call for help. I dug through the sofa cushions, tossing them onto the floor, before I finally found it hidden at the bottom. A few messages had come through from friends and colleagues, asking me if I'd gotten to the evacuation point, but the last of them had been received almost 12 hours earlier. I tried to respond, but the signal had long since vanished. I was hit by the horrific realization that I'd been left behind without any means of contacting the outside world. And despite the waking nightmare I'd been tossed into, I still hadn't the faintest idea what exactly was going on. I'd spent the better part of my adult life in that exact neighborhood, and not once had I heard of any evacuation points nor contingency managers. I almost felt as if I'd awoken in a different world altogether. With a million unanswered questions, I positioned myself by the window, placing myself as low as possible to avoid being seen. The streets outside were barren, rid of parked cars, without a single hint of life. Remo sat by my side, intermittently growling at something unseen in the darkness. I shushed him, but Remo had always been an unnaturally intuitive dog. If the things in the dark scared him, there had to be a very good reason for it. But as we sat there, it started to dawn on me just how unnatural the darkness felt. It was too dense, almost physical. I looked up at the sky, only to be met with an empty void rid of the moon and stars. It wasn't even covered by clouds, just an unbearable emptiness staring back at us. Not daring to enter the void, we had no options left but to follow the given instructions. We were going to hide out of sight until help arrived. With Remo following my every step, I grabbed whatever supplies we had left in the kitchen and moved it down to the windowless basement alongside my television, a radio, and a shotgun. I was making the tiny room as comfortable as possible while we awaited a rescue that might never come. The first day passed quickly, with time morphed by the constant feeling of panic. I turned on the television on an hourly basis, praying for any kind of update. But I was repeatedly met with the same ominous message telling us to stay inside and to not confront whatever beings existed in the dark. All the while, Remo kept his ears peeled, staring at the basement door as if something would break it down at any moment. I kept trying to get my phone to work, to find a bar of signal, but it had turned into a useless brick of technology in the absence of any reception. Outside, the world remained dark and silent. On occasion, I would even dare to open the door to see if we'd be greeted by the bliss of daylight. But no matter how many hours passed, the night remained eternal.
It's going to be okay. They'll come for us. Someone will save us,
I whispered to Remo, attempting to reassure myself more than my fateful companion. As the second day passed without rescue, I started the uncomfortable task of calculating how long we could survive on the limited supplies we'd gathered. Food was scarce enough, but water was the real issue. Even if we rationed it carefully between the two of us, we'd only last a week at most. But it wasn't until the third day before I finally dared to make a short trip upstairs to the kitchen. Crawling on the floor, shotgun in hand, I inched my way through the dark, leaving Remo behind in the safe confinement of the basement. As I left, I could hear his continuous cries. He didn't understand that I just wanted to protect him. He was just scared to be left alone. I turned on the faucet, hoping to at least get some water. But as I turned the handle, not a single drop greeted me. I sat on the kitchen floor in dismay, knowing we would run out entirely in just a couple of days if rescue didn't come. That's when I heard it, the first sound that had greeted us in 3 days. It was so faint, so far away, but it was definitely real. It sounded like a voice, but its origin was too distant to be understood. much less deciphered. I gently opened the kitchen window, hoping to grasp the voice's meaning. It echoed through the neighborhood in such a bizarre way, making it impossible to locate where it was coming from. I contemplated calling out for it, but a strange, innate instinct told me to keep quiet. It was an odd sensation, to be so absolutely certain of something's malice without even knowing what it was. I felt as if the thing wanted me to call out, to find me. Though its voice sounded human, I wasn't entirely sure it was. With profound fear in my soul, I retreated back to the basement. The voice remained far away, ever present in the dark, growing just slightly louder with each call. 2 days passed, and the voice grew progressively closer, until we heard the sound of someone sobbing, letting out a few shattered words in between. They were calling for help, clear words of distress, yet the emotion behind them seemed completely absent. It sounded like a woman who'd never experienced any emotion, trying to convey their meanings. Remo let out quiet growls in protest, too afraid to properly bark. For each iteration of the cry, I grew more certain that it didn't come from a human. And for each hour that passed, it came slightly closer to our hiding place. As the seventh day came and went, it sounded like they were standing on our front porch. I almost didn't dare to breathe, afraid that any sound would alert it to our presence. Remo had buried himself behind my back, hiding from the creature in the night. We were trapped, and in less than a day, we exhausted our last drop of water. If we were going to survive, we'd have to venture in the darkness, facing whatever monstrosities existed outside. "Come on, Remo, it's time," I said as I nudged him awake. The cries outside had finally subsided, which meant whatever creature had produced them had moved further down the neighborhood. Remo looked at me expectantly as I prepared to pack the last bottle of water. He was parched. I let him drink his share, silently promising that we'd find more. I turned the television on for a final time, hoping for a message of hope. But at that point in time, even the emergency alert had stopped broadcasting, replaced by static, colorful bars. "Looks like no one's coming," I mumbled. "I'll get us out of here, Remo, I promise." Though I had a leash, Remo was well enough trained to walk without one. It allowed us to move more freely, him trotting diligently behind me as I led the way. With a trembling hand, I unlocked the back door, taking the first step outside for the first time in over a week. The air felt heavy, moist with an unfamiliar stench. The voice continued, its cries cutting through the thick air. Our plan was to sneak from house to house, avoiding the open streets as we made our way out of town. Remo would whimper intermittently as we walked, trying to hide between my legs.
"Careful, damn it," I ordered as I stumbled over him.
It was a demand he followed for only a few minutes at a time, before cowering between my legs once more. Then we noticed something in the distance, a house with its lights still on. They were dim, just barely visible, yet they shined out like a beacon of hope in an ocean of despair.
"Do you think there's someone inside?" I asked.
I pondered for a moment, whether entering was a wise choice or not. If there were people still alive, they'd surely know better than to light up a sign for all the world to see. But before I could turn around to leave, Remo left my side and started galloping in the direction of the house. I let out a hesitant yell for him to stop, but he sensed something inside, and his mind was made up. I was left with no other option than to follow him to whatever had caught his attention. Within 10 seconds, Remo had reached the house. I reached it a bit later, out of breath from the first hint of exercise I'd suffered through in a week. As I stood at the entrance, catching my breath, I realized that the crying had stopped. Once again, the world around me had fallen completely quiet. I turned around, scanning my surroundings for any sign of life, but there was none to be found. Carefully, but swiftly, I entered the house with its open door, following Remo as he ran in to investigate.
"Where are you going?"
I whispered as he vanished around a corner.
"Remo!"
I closed the door behind me and moved in the direction of the light. It seemed to be coming from the living room, emitted by a television. It was an old, analog box, displaying a mess of static. which proved to be the source of the dim light. Remo stood by it, but his attention wasn't focused on the light. Instead, he stared at a chair facing it. A rotten stench assaulted my nostrils as I got closer, and though I still hadn't seen its source, I could already guess what awaited me in the chair. There it was, the remains of a mangled, elderly woman who missed the evacuation just like me. Her face was locked in an expression of absolute terror, with her chest and innards torn open. But her throat had gotten the worst of the attack. Her larynx was missing entirely.
"Oh my God,"
I gasped. Remo whimpered in front of the old lady. Even he realized something was terribly wrong with the old lady.
"There's nothing we can do,"
I said as I bent down to comfort my dog.
"But I can't have you run off like that again. You get it?"
I put a leash on him, not willing to risk another dangerous sprint into a stranger's home. But since we were already there, the least we could do was gather supplies. We entered the kitchen, only to find most of the cupboards open and raided, possibly by other survivors trapped in town. Or maybe the woman herself had tried to stay alive, not realizing her supplies had all but run out. In the end, we found a couple bottles of water and some canned soup. Not enough to live off, but it might buy us another day.
"All right, let's keep moving."
My words were cut short as something knocked on the front door. I ducked down behind the kitchen counter, listening intently for whatever had found us. It knocked again, letting out an all too familiar sob. It was the same being that had walked down our street. It must have heard us enter the house, stalking our every step. Another knock followed, hard enough to crack the wood. Without wasting more time, I grabbed Remo's leash and guided him through the back of the home. The creature kept sobbing all the while, pounding the door until the frame itself started falling apart. But we wouldn't stay behind to face its wrath. Instead, we managed to squeeze ourselves through a small window, escaping back into the eternal night. We got out just in time to hear the creature break the door open. Without looking back, we ran as fast as we could through the darkness, not daring to stop for even a moment. Only once we were on the verge of exhaustion did we finally slow down. For just a moment, I dared to look behind us, half expecting the creature to be right there. But to my surprise, there was nothing to be seen.
"We made it,"
I said, between gasps of air. We'd been chased deeper into the neighborhood and were standing in front of a large house with boarded-up windows and a heavy, secure door. It had been owned by one of the wealthier families in town, heavily monitored with multiple security cameras. Though power appeared to be turned off, it would still be our best shot at survival. I walked up to the door, ready for it to be locked with no means of getting inside. But as I pulled the handle, I was shocked to hear it click open. It was clear that the place had been occupied following the evacuation, based solely on the boarded-up windows, but why it had been unlocked remained a mystery.
"Hello?"
I let out as loudly as I dared. No response. I locked the door behind us and entered into a large living room. The place had been torn apart, but from the looks of things, it hadn't been due to a struggle. There was no blood, no holes in the walls or broken windows, just furniture, plates, and pictures strewn across the place. It almost looked as if someone had tossed furniture around in a fit of rage. But due to the darkness, it was hard to tell for sure. And before I could contemplate the state of the place any further, Remo started tugging on the leash.
"Wait!"
I ordered, but there was no stopping him once he sensed something. He led me to a set of stairs leading up to the second floor. A dim light could be seen from the top, but other than that, there were no signs of life.
"Hey, is there anyone up there?"
I asked. Again, I was met with no response. Remo kept pulling me up the steps. They were covered in tiny glass fragments from a broken window high up on the wall. While too small for anyone to fit through, something had shattered it, seemingly from the outside.
"Careful with the glass,"
I told Remo, but he didn't seem to care. As we neared the top, we were once again met with the same foul stench we smelled in the last house we entered. Only then did it occur to me why the door had been left open, because the occupants had been murdered. With trepidation in each step, we made our way upstairs. I called out a couple of more times, hoping against all odds that we'd find anyone still alive.
"Anyone up there?"
Upstairs, there was a narrow hallway with multiple doors lining each side. only one of them stood open, the one emitting a dim blue light. It led into a small office, which is where we'd find our next victim. He was a middle-aged man sitting dead in the chair with an empty bottle of pills on the desk and a gun still clenched into his dangling, dead hand. The cause of death was obvious, a self-inflicted gunshot wound at the temple. But what surprised me even more than his death was the fact that he was sitting in front of a still-running computer. He'd been typing a message before his death, which meant the house still had a power supply. I approached the desk, wondering what thoughts he put down before ending his own life. But before I could read it, Remo started pulling on the leash again. He dragged me further down the hallway, into a bedroom that smelled even worse than the office. There, on the bed, lay the mutilated corpse of a woman and a young boy. Like the elderly woman, their throats had been torn open, and their larynxes had been removed. They'd been murdered by the creature in the dark, only to be found by their husband and father. In desperate need of answers, we returned to the office. I pried the gun from the man's cold, dead hands, knowing it might come in handy. Then I started reading the message he typed out.
"We awoke in a world of hell, monsters lurking on every corner. We tried to escape, but they took Dennis. So, we decided to hide. Our place was safe. They couldn't have gotten through the door, and we boarded up the windows. We should have been fine, but I forgot about the damn skylight. I thought it was too small for the creatures to get through, but I was wrong. They can shift their shapes to get through any obstacle. We didn't stand a chance. I only survived because I was out looking for supplies. I wish I could have died with my family. I'm so sorry. I love you. I'm not going to let them get me. I won't let them take my voice like they took yours. I'll see you soon."
In his sorrow, he must have forgotten to lock the door, or neglected to. Or maybe he just wanted his body to be found, so his story could be known. Whatever the case, I doubted anyone else would ever set foot in town. He, like the rest of the dead, would be forgotten by time itself. But that's when I noticed something that should have been impossible, hidden in plain sight. There, on his desktop computer, an internet symbol was displayed proudly. Against all odds, he was still connected to the outside world. Hope arose within me. If I could get a message out, to let someone know that there are still survivors in town, maybe they'll send help. I glanced over at the dead man, apologizing to him before gently removing his body from the chair. Then I sat down, ready to type in my plea for help with a detailed description of where to find us in our otherwise unknown town. My fingers trembled. There was an uneasy feeling still present within my chest, something I had read in the man's suicide note. I forgot about the damn skylight. With that, I shot to my feet. A sound came from down the hall. Nothing more than a faint chuckle could be heard, taking the voice of a young boy. The creature that had killed the family was still inside the house, and it knew we were there. As I went to grab the gun from the desk, I let Remo's leash slip. I ordered him to stay put, but he already rushed off in the direction of the creature. He barked angrily as he vanished around the corner, ready to face any threat to keep me safe.
"Remo!"
I ordered, frozen in fear. Another chuckle was heard, followed by a loud crack and a pathetic whimper.
"No!"
I gasped, knowing my only friend left in the world had just been killed. There was no way out of the house without crossing paths with the monster, nor could I do anything to save Remo. So, with the little time I had left, I barricaded myself within the office, putting whatever furniture I could find between me and the door. With no time to waste, I started typing out a message. Rescue had become little more than a fever dream, and it would only be a matter of time before the creature breaks through the doors and steals my voice. On the other side of the door, I already hear the sounds of Remo barking and whimpering at the same time. A poor imitation of my best friend, trying to lure me out with a stolen voice. But the knocks are powerful, easily cracking the wooden door. The only solace I have is the dead man still lying beside me. His throat is still intact. I guess they don't use damaged goods. Maybe I'll take advantage of the same exit strategy. On the other hand, I don't want to go down without a fight. I'm not expecting a response, and this is not a call for help. This is a warning to stay away. Let this place be forgotten. Let the beasts starve. Whatever they are, there's no way we can win.